You're listening to the micro version of the Savage Lovecast, www.savagelovecast.com.
If you're stuck in a relationship quandary, or if you're looking for sexual harmony, well, there's nothing you can't ask on the Savage Lovecast.
I'm not a member of any organized political party. I'm a Democrat. The joke that Will Rogers made a million years ago. I don't think Will Rogers, who's been dead for decades, would say that today. Democrats are organized now. Something about the ongoing near death of our democracy experience has focused the mind, our minds, liberal, progressive, democratic minds, and we are organizing. And I don't know who said this first, but I've heard it a million times in reference to Democrats snatching defeat from the jaws of victory. Usually it's said about Democrats when we lose a race or a legislative battle that we really should have won and looked like we were going to win up till the last moment when we snatched defeat from the jaws of victory. But here's the weird thing. We won last Tuesday night. We won the midterm elections thanks to all those Democrats, Democratic Socialists, lefties, and progressives who organized and fought and protested and got out there and voted and are now in Florida and Georgia and Arizona fighting to get their votes counted. We didn't win some high-profile long-shot marquee races. The Zodiac Killer is going back to the Senate. But we took the House on Tuesday night. And as the vote counting has continued over the course of the last week, the incoming Democratic majority in the House went from slim to not so slim to thick. Democrats are on track to pick up nearly 40 seats in the House. They may even hit 40 seats in the House. The single biggest Democratic swing since Watergate. Dems also took 7 governor's mansions, may take an 8th in Florida, hundreds of state legislative seats. And hey, remember that anti-gay baker who fought all the way to the Supreme Court for the right to discriminate against gays and lesbians? His bakery, Masterpiece Cake Shop, is in Colorado. And his new governor, Jared Polis, is a gay man, the first openly gay person elected governor in our country's history. For the first time, there are going to be Native American women in Congress, 2 of them. Both of them elected last Tuesday night. One, Charisse Davids, is a lesbian mixed martial arts fighter who defeated an anti-LGBT incumbent in blood red Kansas, which, by the way, also elected a Democratic governor for the first time in ages. The new Democratic governor in Kansas, not gay, but, you know, no one's perfect. Yeah, Republicans expanded their majority in the Senate, and yes, that means we have to pray every day for Ruth Bader Ginsburg's health and Stephen Breyer's, too. But the Senate was always a long shot, and Dems had to defend far more seats in that chamber than the R's did, and the results, if we hadn't organized, if we hadn't fought, could have been much, much worse, and would have been, if not for the hard work of all those Democrats who looked around after the 2016 election and decided that they, personally, individually, had to get out there and do the hard work of transforming the Democratic Party into something that Will Rogers might not have recognized again, an organized political party. So please, if you were demoralized by talking heads on election night who were looking around at the initial results and saying the blue wave didn't materialize, they were wrong. And you need to buck the fuck up. We won. We didn't win everything, but we won and we won big, and they are scared and they want to demoralize us because they are terrified of what 2020 is going to look like if we keep organizing and keep fighting and keep voting. Which is exactly what we are going to do. All right, coming up on today's show on the micro-free edition of the Savage Lovecast, tons of your Q's, lots of my A's, and on the Magnum subscription edition of the Savage Lovecast that you can subscribe to at savagelovecast.com, twice as long and no ads, I speak with an expert about whether it's possible for alcoholics to drink in moderation. All that coming up on today's show. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by AdamandEve.com. Get 50% off one item and free shipping when you enter the offer code SAVAGE at checkout. Not sure what to get your favorite asshole for the holidays? Why not give him the gift of a clean butt? Nothing says I love you like a tushy, the modern bidet that washes the dingle bells from your butt cracker. Everyone you know, particularly those people you know biblically, could use a tushy bidet. With a very simple 10-minute install, anyone who poops can install this thing. And at only $69, Tushy is the perfect gift for the holidays. Get it? Holidays? Use the promo code SAVAGE for 10% off a Tushy bidet. Stop wiping and start washing with Tushy. Today's episode is brought to you by Blue Apron. Blue Apron delivers all fresh, high-quality ingredients and recipes you need to create delicious home-cooked meals. Get your first three meals for free by going to blueapron.com/savage.
Hi, Dan. I am a 32-year-old lesbian. I've been in a committed relationship for 2.5 years. We've been engaged for the past 8 months. And ever since we got engaged, one, we stopped having sex. We got engaged on Valentine's Day and we haven't had sex since. And she's the one that proposed to me. And a couple of times she has said throughout our engagement, this is just moving too fast. This is too quickly. I don't know. And then we would talk about it and she'd say, okay, I feel so much better. I just got scared, but it makes me feel better when I talk about it. We can go as planned. And so I booked a venue. I booked a photographer. I am having my dress made. And a couple times she just comes up to me, and like this has happened a couple times where she's come up to me and said, I just can't do this. It's moving too fast. And we would talk about it and she would just tell me her fears and then she would feel better. And she'd say, okay, let's keep going. I want to be married to you. I know I do. And this last time was last week. She said that she absolutely cannot marry me next year when we've had it planned, which she said was okay. And I just don't know what she said. She absolutely cannot marry me then. So our wedding is off now, but I don't know how to move forward with this. I don't know if we should just break up. I just don't know.
Move forward? How about move out? How about move on? Listen to what she's been telling you ever since she proposed. Stopped having sex with you. Has told you in a million different ways, not in code explicitly, that she's not sure that she wants to marry you or wants to be with you. And at some point, you have to take her at her word. Sounds like your girlfriend is doing that awful thing people do where they think they're being kind if they play Hamlet about ending a relationship. They're just not sure what to do. They're on the fence. They love you. They don't love you. They want this. They don't want it. And the person that they're Hamleting that whole time, who wants to be with them, is hoping that they'll fall on the wants to be with me side of the fence eventually. But what they're telling you is, I want out, I want out, I want out, I want out, I want out. But I don't want to take responsibility for it. I don't want to be mean. I don't want to tell you I never liked you or I don't love you anymore because that'll hurt you. And so instead, I'll act in cruel and arbitrary ways that force you eventually to preserve your own sanity. And whatever is left of your ego after I'm done shoving it into this wood chipper, it'll force you to go and you to dump me. And then I get to play the dumped party and the hurt one in front of all of our friends because you left me when I was still hamletting it up about whether I wanted to be with you at all. And moving out and moving on, it doesn't preclude moving back in with this person down the road if they get their shit together and they realize that you indeed are the person they want to be with. That's what happened in my mother's second marriage. We were dating a guy for a while. They got engaged. And then he got cold feet. I believe my mother ended it. And then he came around. And then they spent 30 years together, 30 wonderful years together. So that can happen. Someone can come around and circle back. And if you're still available when they circle back to you, you can take them back if you wish. But you have to stop being the fly that your girlfriend is picking the wings off of. Go. And if indeed she does circle back a year or two from now and proposes to you again, a very long engagement and a whole lot of sex during that engagement, or you're going to call it off for the second and last time.
Hi, I am a 27 female from Texas. And in May, I was tested positive for HSV2. It was the first time I believe that I've ever been tested for herpes. And I guess they tested me because I told them that I had had multiple partners in the past year, which was true, because I know that the CDC does not typically recommend testing for herpes. So I got that news and I was honestly very, very shocked. I've never had any symptoms. I've never slept with anyone that I knew had HSV2. And so it was quite a rock to my world. And it's been quite a rock to my dating world. And I've just been struggling on how to navigate this. I know I've listened to a couple of your podcasts where you've talked about herpes and had some people from Planned Parenthood come and talk about herpes. But it's been very difficult. So I'm just asking, when should I disclose to someone that I have been tested positive for HSV2, but that I'm also on suppressant medication. I don't have any symptoms. And do I need to tell everyone that I sleep with that I have herpes because I don't have any symptoms?
This is a hard one to answer, honestly, because if you're out there having casual sex, you're just hooking up with people. People should assume herpes is really common, really prevalent. Most people who have it don't know that they have it, just as you, caller, didn't know that you had it until you went and got tested. And most people who have it have one outbreak and never have another outbreak ever again, or had an outbreak that they didn't even perceive. That's why a lot of people who have it don't know they have it. They had an outbreak and it was so minimal. They didn't notice it, but yet they have herpes and they are potentially infectious. But you know you have it and you're taking meds. The odds, if the meds are working for you, that you will transmit herpes to someone else are very, very low. And if you're having casual sex with somebody who's having casual sex with a lot of different people, they should just assume that they are going to bed with people who have herpes occasionally, and that they are assuming that risk because it is really, really common. And again, not that big a deal. And yet the stigma and the shame and the fear of it looms so large in people's minds and imaginations, and the fear of it is so irrational that putting the burden on someone in a casual encounter to disclose that they have herpes to someone who should just know that if they're having a lot of casual sex, a lot of randos, that they are assuming some degree of risk for contact or exposure. If not infection, you can be exposed without the infection taken. And that they should just assume a certain degree of risk that they're taking on of their own free will for exposure to this, in most cases, no big deal STI, NBD STI. So I think with casual partners, who have a lot of casual partners who are out there just hooking up, I don't actually think that you're under an obligation to disclose. That said, if you're out there having casual sex and you have casual sex with somebody and you really click and then you have casual sex with that person again and then you start hanging out with that person and then a year later you're in a relationship with that person and you have not yet disclosed, you're going to have to disclose at some point. And the more time that passes, the more it will begin to feel like an active lie. Not a passive lie, not a lie of omission, but a lie you are telling this person. And then what? Then the risks of disclosing are huge, because what's on the line then? Not some casual hookup. What's on the line then is your relationship. What's on the line then is the person to whom you may be at that point engaged or married to. And that fear, once there are real stakes, not just, oh, I'm not going to get laid tonight, but, oh, I might get broken up with, dumped, have to move, or get divorced. The greater the stakes, the harder it becomes to disclose. And when I think about that outcome, I then circle back to, yeah, you should disclose to casual partners to spare yourself that kind of stress and pressure if you wind up in an LTR with one of your casual hookups, which is, when I think about the people I know in LTRs, almost every LTR in my social circle was a casual hookup that grew into a relationship. So why not disclose it to start? And if that person freaks out, then they're not someone you'd want to be in a relationship with, and they're not someone who deserves even a one-night stand with your hot, fine, very low-risk ass. So I want to have my cock and suck it too here. I want to tell you that you don't have to disclose, but I want to also urge you to disclose. The sorting hat thing. You tell them one thing about you, they tell you everything you need to know at that moment about them. Might cost you some casual hookups, but in the long run, you're going to be protecting yourself from fear, rejection, heartache, divorce 5 years in. Costing myself a few casual hookups is a price I'd be willing to pay to spare myself that kind of grief. Your call, though. This episode of the Savage Lovecast is brought to you by Blue Apron. Blue Apron delivers farm-fresh ingredients and step-by-step recipes to your door. Blue Apron's mission is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everyone. And as I like to say, they made it accessible to me, someone who had never cooked anything more complicated than toast or boiled water. And if they could turn me into a home cook, they can turn you into a home cook. Blue Apron achieves miracles like that by supporting a more sustainable food system, setting the highest standards for ingredients, and building a community of home chefs. You get to choose chef design recipes, and they get to deliver fresh, seasonally inspired ingredients, and you can cook incredible meals in as little as 20 minutes. Terry and I are both crazy busy, so it's a real joy for us to let Blue Apron do the menu planning, the shopping, and the meal prep. Then we cook it up and eat it up. It's so good. This week's menu includes seared steaks and garlic kale with cheesy roasted potatoes, and also southern-style rice bowl with sweet potatoes, collard greens, and a soft-boiled egg. All of this delicious food is quick and easy to prepare and ideal for beginning home cooks like I used to be before we got on Blue Apron. So check out this week's menu and get your first three meals for free at blueapron.com/savage. That's blueapron.com/savage to get your first three meals for free. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
Hi, Dan. I'm a 30-year-old straight female. I'm engaged to a wonderful man, and per your advice, we had a chat early on about kids and Yahtzee. Neither of us really want them. So I got an IUD a few years ago because I want to keep that on lockdown and because I have horribly adverse reactions to hormonal birth control. And it's kind of coming around time to get that IUD changed out, yanked out, and another one shoved back up in there. And I don't know if you've ever had a huge piece of metal shoved into your cervix, but that shit hurts. I actually passed out during my first appointment, and I've been kind of freaked out about getting it changed out. So in passing, I mentioned to my fiancé that maybe he could consider getting a vasectomy. And he freaked the fuck out. I was actually really surprised by how much he balked at the idea, and I don't know if I'm off base. I kind of did a little Google, and yes, it's surgery, right? But it doesn't seem like it's crazily invasive. So Dan, am I off base here? I don't know why it should be my responsibility to get huge pieces of metal shoved into my cervix when maybe there's an option out there for men too, or maybe it's an ego thing, you know, with the whole getting your manhood taken away. Anyway, I'd love to hear your thoughts.
You have strong feelings about vasectomies.
Yeah, I do. I'm the sexy man from Texas.
No, you're not. You're Nancy Hartunian. You're the Savage Lovecast producer.
Yeah, I do. I have strong feelings about vasectomies. Yeah, I'm pro vasectomy. I'm so pro vasectomy.
You sneak up on men in the park in the middle of the night and give them vasectomies.
It's like a low pain, low cost, low problem solution.
So this guy should get a vasectomy.
Yeah, he should get a vasectomy.
But he freaked out at just his fiance floating the idea that instead of her having a piece of metal painfully shoved into her uterus, the IUD, not all people experience pain during the insertion of an IUD. Many do, but and once it's in, it's not a constant source of pain. But she thinks instead of her having to do that, he should have to get castrated.
Yeah. It's not castration.
Oh, come on. It's totally fucking castration. There are no balls left afterwards, right? I mean, what otherwise, why is this guy freaking out? I guess I'm confusing vasectomy with getting fixed.
Yeah. No, so many men should get fixed. This one drives me crazy because women go through so much medical intervention. And let me tell you something. I get to listen to all the calls that come in, and any time, except for the ones that are over 3 minutes, which I sometimes just delete without listening to. Hi, listeners.
Behind the scenes.
Keep it under 3 minutes. Anytime we get a call that basically has to do with women's health and definitely with IUDs, we get flooded with calls from women who talk about how painful it is, how the hormonal IUD affects them. It's like, it's not incidental. It's like a serious health issue for women.
Right.
And for men,
hormonal birth control can crater your libido. It can affect your skin and your weight and your mood. There are some people have really negative reactions to some people, many women, some men, some trans men take hormonal birth control, but many have negative reactions to hormonal birth control.
I mean, just in defense of it, many, many do not. I mean, right. IUDs are great. Hooray for IUDs. But there are, it's true, there are many people who have a hard time with them. And I also can guarantee you that when we talk about vasectomies, do you know how many calls I've gotten from men with botched vasectomies or any sort of problem with vasectomies? Do you know what that number is?
I'm on the edge of my seat.
It is a number.
What
is
it?
It's the number zero.
I thought zero was the absence of a number.
I think it's technically a number.
Okay,
something.
Well, I don't know. We'll
this is math. We've moved out of both of our wheelhouses.
So, but the guy freaked out, so it's obviously a no-go. He had a hugely negative reaction.
And she's having a hugely negative reaction to getting that IUD shoved back up in her again.
So they're at an impasse.
Yes. They could wear condoms. Then he might come around.
Anal. The original IUD. In you, dookie.
Yeah. Yeah, no, this whole idea that, like, men, you know, have, like, a sexual fantasy about impregnating their women, that's a fantasy. And fantasies are lovely.
It's not just straight men who have that fantasy about impregnating their partners and their semen having this sort of magic power, it being literally potent. You can find on all sorts of gay Tumblr porn sites people talking about, you know, anal intercourse. I'm going to knock him up. I'm going to get him pregnant. You will see guys who fetishize, even gay guys, the power of semen to not just frost a turd, which is usually what it's doing during anal intercourse, but to make the magic happen, to make life, to make a baby, even in some guy's butt. And so I can't imagine, having stumbled over enough of this gay porn, that this isn't something that looms even larger in the erotic imaginations of many straight men, even if they have no intention of having children ever. Just knowing that they could, knowing that their semen still has this power, must be hugely arousing for many straight men. And so you're not just asking like them to, you know, to turn off the tap. You're asking them to let go of something that may have huge erotic significance to them.
It may have huge erotic significance to them, but if gay men can get off on the idea of impregnating each other and have that massive suspension of disbelief,
then so can straight men. I don't know what you're talking about, Ms.
Nardunian. Straight men, once you get that vasectomy and you can no longer knock somebody up, you can pretend it never happened and you can still be Mr. Virile in your mind, which just is where it all should be anyway.
If gay guys can pretend that they're going to be able to knock up a butt.
Yeah.
Some of them, not all of them, and I want to suggest that all gay guys think about that. I certainly don't. But I do want to say that it's, you know, not just my suspension of disbelief that's massive. All sorts of things can be massive, not just that. But that's, I think,
so we've heard,
hugely important. But, you know, sometimes I think about gay men. I think about straight men. I think about my brother Billy, who's been with his girlfriend for many, many years. And he got a vasectomy many years ago. He never wanted children. He got it in his 20s, very young. But on some level, there's this biological drive. The sex drive, you know, is about intimacy and connection and pleasure. It's also about reproduction, and I'm willing to cop to that. So on some level, even though Billy has interfered with his ability to make a baby, some part of Billy's reptile brain is driving him to have sex to get his girlfriend pregnant, just as I think some part of my reptile brain is driving me in error to have sex to get my husband pregnant, which is not going to happen. Anything is possible with God, as people who oppose same-sex relationships like to say. So, and two men can't make a baby, therefore we shouldn't get married. But fingers crossed, we'll see. Keep inseminating him, see what happens.
Keep praying, folks.
Still, I think you're being a little too cavalier, not about male sexuality and what it means. You know, female sexuality has all this power, right? The in touch, in tides with the moon and bleeding once a month and the eggs and the power to create life and gestate life and bring new life into the world. There's all this significance to, you know, the female reproductive system that I think it's bound up in a lot of women's sort of erotic script. And for dudes, there's just that one thing. There's just the presence of the swimmers. There's just the sperm cells. That's the only powerful thing about the dude's reproductive system. It's the only magic. And you're asking the dude to let that magic go.
I just need to say, like, you know, you've heard me say this so many times on the show. It's time for men to step up. And this is an easy one. This one's so easy. You can be the one to take it for the team and overpopulation. Like, get a vasectomy as soon as you know that you don't want to have kids.
And how free.
And let your women be free of all this medical intervention. It's a burden, guys.
And you can then be free.
Yeah.
You know, birth control methods fail. And if you never want a kid, this is an incredibly effective method. There is a failure rate, very, 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 very small, well under 1% of failure rate for vasectomy. So a vasectomy can fail. But if you really, really, really don't want kids and you're a dude, it seems to me it's the rational thing to do. But not all sex and desire and eroticism is strictly rational.
Yeah. Yeah, it's bound up in fantasy. But you do have some control of your fantasies, and there's a time to make way for reality.
And again, like you said, if the faggots can suspend their disbelief and pretend they're going to knock each other up and make Tumblr porn about it, you can get a vasectomy and then suspend your disbelief and pretend that you're still going to be able to knock her up with your magic semen.
Yeah, don't be such a cowardly scrote. It's an easy procedure, guys. You don't need to freak out and faint over it.
Every year around this time, we reflect on what we have to be thankful for. Many people are thankful for their friends and family, financial stability, the amazing orgasms they're able to achieve, and the people who help bring them to climax. I'm personally thankful for my listeners, and I am thankful for clean and sexy butts. And there's a lot more clean and sexy butt out there these days thanks to Tushy, the modern bidet attachment that hooks up to any standard toilet and washes butts way better than toilet paper. Thanks to Tushy, no more skid marks, no more dingleberries, no more embarrassment, just a clean, fresh, again, very sexy butthole. Tushy installs on most toilets in under 10 minutes. It just snaps on, and it's only $69, so what is your excuse? Start cleaning your butt the way it deserves to be cleaned and give yourself another reason to be thankful this year. Use the promo code SAVAGE for 10% off a Tushy bidet. And if you're already a Tushy convert, give the gift of Tushy to a deserving butt in need. It's a great gift for anyone who poops, which is literally just about everyone. Stop wiping, start washing with Tushy.
Hi, Dan. I am 27, and I'm a straight girl, and I've been in a relationship for the last 2.5 years, the last year of which has been long distance. So when we're long distance, we have had a lot of like FaceTime sex over that time, and it was fine, but I really hated it. And I did it because I really gave it like the old college try to like really try to like it, because I did like that we were physically connecting that way. But I just, what it came down to for me was that I was just really obsessed with the camera, and I really hated it. And I was like really obsessed with like, how does my body look? And do I look fat? And I'm like a very thin person, so this doesn't even make sense. But I was just too obsessed with like how I looked in the camera and like whether or not I was wearing makeup or how my body hair looked. It was, I couldn't like get turned on or sexual or really enjoy it at all, just because I was so focused on this stupid camera. So after some wrestling with it and avoiding it for a long time, I finally told my boyfriend, just told him, you know, I don't like this, but I like physically connecting with you. So my alternate proposal is just phone sex, just auditory, just masturbating together on the phone, which I should say, I really like masturbating together when we're in person together. I find it really, really hot and erotic and intimate, but just something about the FaceTime camera, it just totally ruins it for me. And he was sad. He was like, oh, you know, I noticed that you'd basically been like coming up with excuses not to, which I had been, to not have phone sex. And he's like, okay, I'll try it. And he's disappointed. And I guess my question is like, does old fashioned phone sex, is that like a good compromise? Does he just have to like back up and deal with this until he finally moves to be with me? Or do I just need to back up and just get over my weird gender shit?
I feel your pain about the FaceTime thing, because I don't like to look at myself. I don't like to have pictures taken. I don't like to see pictures of me. I take a lot of pictures of everyone around me because I like to take pictures, but I never like to be in them. And the problem, if you're going to FaceTime, particularly naked FaceTime with someone, is there's that little square that's showing you what you look like at that moment that shows you your own picture, right?
Yeah.
And your eyes go right there. You're always checking yourself out.
Yeah, I can't turn it off.
Yeah, and that's really distracting. You can't turn it off, but you can put a post-it note over it.
I don't know. I feel like I'd still worry. I don't know if it's just like the lighting or whatever, but I just always worry about how I look.
You don't worry when you masturbate together in person and he's looking right at you.
No.
Right?
I don't. But I feel like he gets the full picture then, you know?
Well, you have to trust that maybe he has the full picture in his mind. So if he's only getting a little snippet of you on FaceTime at that moment, he's incorporating that little snippet into the fuller picture that is already etched into his optic nerves about what the fuck his girlfriend looks like. So he's not just taking that little, you know, screwy image online. He's incorporating that image to all the other images he has in his wank file in his head, his Solodex, as I like to call it. But I mean, you know, I'm not trying to pressure you, but there are options here, including lowering the lights, including getting some literal gels, like theatrical gels that you can tape over your camera on your computer.
Okay.
And you can light yourself better. If it makes you more comfortable. Also, a perfectly reasonable option and compromise is we're just going to have phone sex for now because this is too unsexy to me. It flips me out. I'm not aroused when I have to do this. And you know, I'm giving you this advice knowing I'm a total hypocrite. I would never have FaceTime jack-off sex with anybody because I wouldn't be able to not pick up the post-it note and look at myself and puke or worry
okay
that I looked bad. And I always think I look, you know, I think if I'm standing in front of the camera, I look bad. So
yeah.
I feel your pain. But you have a couple of options. There's some things you can do with your FaceTime. Yeah, there's some things you can do to tweak FaceTime to make it work for you. Also, an option is he can be in FaceTime. You can cover your camera so he can't see you, but you can have some curated videos of yourself, some videos you've taken that you like.
Okay.
That
yeah.
you can send him while he's masturbating, while you watch. And what he's watching on his phone instead of his computer are the images of you that you're comfortable sharing.
Okay.
So there's still this interaction that has a visual component for him.
The other night he suggested, like, if he asked if he could masturbate, and he said, like, basically, like, into the camera, and basically said, like, no pressure for me, which didn't end up doing because some of my friends came over unexpectedly. So I got out of that without...
you say that like you wouldn't have wanted to do it.
You know, it freaks me out. I don't know. I think it's just like, but maybe if I just covered the camera, because I think I just get too stuck on, like, what do I do with my hands?
Masturbate.
You know?
You masturbate.
I mean, well, yeah, but but like, what do I do on the camera?
I think what you need to do here is take yes for an answer. He's offering to do FaceTime with you where only he is seen because he wants you to watch. That'll turn him on to know that you're watching him masturbate. And you don't have to be watched. And you shouldn't feel guilty in that moment. Like, oh God, if I was only more comfortable, he could watch me too. And it's not fair that I get to watch him and he doesn't get to watch me. No, 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 no. Sometimes it can be a little unfair because it works for both of you. He's happy to be watched. You're happy not to be watched. You're both happy. That's what's important.
Okay. And let me ask you one more thing.
But I want to encourage you to surprise him, actually, with my other idea. Like, set that up. I'm going to cover my camera. I'm going to watch you masturbate. We can talk while you masturbate, but you're not going to be able to see me. And then have a couple of little video clips ready to send him. Tell him to have his phone handy,
okay,
too. And then surprise him while you're watching him masturbate with a few images of you that you're comfortable sharing with him. And I hope he's the kind of boyfriend you can trust sharing those kinds of images with. And then you'll get to watch him be delighted when these images come through. You'll get to watch him look at his phone and watch his dick throb. And what kind of an affirmation is that going to be? What kind of an ego boost is that going to be? A pretty good one, I think.
Yeah, I think he'd really like that. So the last question I have, which is just that, like, so say I try this and I'm willing to try it for sure. But if I try this and I'm still just like, it's just too much for me, is it fair to say, like, phone sex is like a thing that I'm comfortable with and it's I'm happy and I enjoy it and it turns me on too. So is it okay to say this is just what we're going to do until we're not in a long distance relationship anymore?
Absolutely.
Like, is that fair?
Absolutely. Absolutely fair. It's also fair for him to ask you to think about it or to reconsider or to game out ways that you might be more comfortable doing FaceTime with him if that turns him on. But you get to say no to anything at any time for any reason. And if you're not comfortable doing it, and if it has the opposite of the intended effect, if it turns you off to do it, eventually he's just going to have to let it go. You should ask him that. Like, this turns me off. You don't want me to do this to turn me off. That doesn't make any sense. But he's already responded with an accommodation that allows you guys to FaceTime together where he's the only one on camera. And that, to me, seems like a perfectly reasonable counter, at least for the moment. Maybe in time you'll become more comfortable in front of the camera, or you'll get a filter and feel more comfortable, and your position may change, your feelings may change, you may be willing to go there. But his compromise is, I'm doing FaceTime and you're having phone sex, but you can see me, but I can't see you. So it's phone sex from your end and video sex from my end, and then you both kind of have three quarters of what you want. And you,
yeah, that sounds good.
And do you like to watch him?
Yeah, I do. I love it. I mean, it's weird. I feel like my trepidation with the camera just doesn't make any sense.
Oh my God. Take yes for an answer. You said, I'm not comfortable doing this. He says, can I keep doing it? And you're like, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. Let him keep doing it. He said, let me do this. You don't have to do it. You just have to listen and talk, which is what you want to do. So you're getting to do what you want to do. He's getting to do what he wants to do. Everybody wins. Yahtzee. The solution, you didn't need me to call you. The solution was already on the table and your boyfriend put it there. Sounds like a good boyfriend. You should keep that one.
I'm working on it. Yeah.
Good luck.
All right. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Here at the Savage Lovecast, we have an imperative that we take seriously, making sure you and your partners have the best orgasms you possibly can. And for this reason, we are huge fans of sex toys. So why not head over to adamandeve.com? Right now, they're offering 50% off just about any item, which is incredible, plus free shipping on your entire order, also incredible. So what do you have to do to get your 50% off one item and free shipping? It's not hard. Just go to adamandeve.com and select any one item. It could be an adventurous new toy or anything you desire. Just enter offer code SAVAGE at checkout and you'll get 50% off almost any item. Go check out adamandeve.com today. Select one item, get 50% off, including free shipping. Again, when you enter offer code SAVAGE. That's SAVAGE, SAVAGE at adamandeve.com.
Hi, Dan. I am a cis 42-year-old woman. I've been married to my husband for almost 10 years. When we began dating, we laid most of our kink cards on the table. I was totally cool with all of his kinks. But more recently, he has asked me to insert a metal sound in his penis. My initial response was a hard no. I love this man, and I want to make him happy in bed, but I do not feel comfortable committing to this particular act, and I'm not sure I ever will. Maybe it's because I have had UTIs in the past and actually know what this sensation is. And for me, I'm deeply put off by it, especially when having it done in a medical office. But the fact that he wants to explore this with me in the bedroom makes me want to squirm even more. And I'm a pretty girl who's been pretty open to kink, but I'm drawing a hard line here. My husband thinks I'm being dismissive and selfish to his desires. What the actual fuck?
Sounding is one of those kinks that freaks people out. You're not the only person out there who's had this initial reaction to someone's request to experience sounding, which is the insertion of a metal rod into the urethra. They are used, they have a medical purpose. When people's urethras are scarred or constricted, they will go to the doctor, and the doctor will train them how to insert this metal rod into their urethra to open it up, stretch it out, push back against the scar tissue so they can pee again and ejaculate again. It's a legit thing. You might want to go watch some sounding porn before you reiterate this hard no, because people have it in their head that it is incredibly painful to be sounded. Or maybe they've seen the wrong sounding porn first, where the rods are enormous, where people have stretched out their urethras. A guy has stretched out his urethra to a point where he can insert like a sound that's the width of a pinky or a middle finger all the way up his urethra. And of course, you look at that and think, that must be incredibly painful. And in reality, sounds come in sets, various widths or diameters. I'm not sure which is the term I should be using here, from very, very skinny to a little bit thicker to ridiculous. So your husband isn't asking you to jackhammer some fucking rebar into his dick. The way you use a sound in sex play is it's sterilized, it is lubricated, your husband is aroused, your play partner's aroused, he's hard, he's producing pre-cum lubricant of his own in his urethra. And you place the sound at the tip of the erect penis, and it basically just kind of sinks in all of its own accord. I've been to a few play parties. I've gone to a few leather fetish events. I have seen this happen. And the person to whom it is happening is not shrieking in pain. Quite the opposite. And what is wrapped around the urethra at a certain point? The prostate gland. What feels good to have your prostate gland stimulated? It does provide for some guys a form of internal prostate stimulation that's very arousing. And for some guys, it's the mind fuck of it. Here is the thing. Here is my almighty penis with which I penetrate others. And, oh my God, my penis is being penetrated. Ah, that's so transgressive. Oh, that's so taboo. Oh, that's such an inversion. And that itself can be psychologically arousing. Solo sounding play is also an option for your husband. If this is a no-go area for you, if you cannot bring yourself to do this, if penetrating his penis in this way ruins his penis for you, if it is a libido killer, you can tap out and say, hey, this is something that you're going to have to do on your own. And indeed, you can do it on your own. There are risks. You can get prostatitis, infection of the prostate gland. You can get a urinary tract infection if your sound isn't appropriately sterilized. But it's one of those things like peeing on someone that people have this freak out that seems to me to exist in inverse proportion to just how fucking dangerous or freaky or weird this actually is. I think it makes a kind of intuitive sense. Transgression turns people on. To take the cock, the penetrative tool, and penetrate it with another tool. Yeah, you can see why that for many men would be a turn on. Apparently it is for your husband. Give it a think. Sit with it for a minute. Maybe watch a little non-hardcore sounding porn where it's not stirred in together with other forms of BDSM or pain play, where it's not an electrified sound. Those are out there. Where it's just the gentle sinking of a metal rod, a clean, sterile, surgical steel metal rod into a urethra, and then see how you feel. If you still can't go there, tell him to get online, order himself a set of sounds, and hide them, because you don't want to have to think about it, but if he wants to do it on his own, he certainly can.
Hi, Dan. This is completely unscripted. So I am a cis-hetero 22-year-old female in a very liberal city in Texas, and I am concerned that I am too friendly with men. I don't date often, but I consider myself a very attractive, confident woman, and I find that, you know, I'm very outgoing, and I love to talk to people and be friendly with people, but lately I've been noticing a trend that has always kind of persisted, but has just now, especially with Kavanaugh, et cetera, has really made me uncomfortable. I find myself in conversation with, you know, if a maintenance man comes in to fix my apartment, I strike up conversation. My coworkers who are males, I also, you know, am very friendly with them. And I notice that what they do is they proposition me in a way. You know, I had one coworker who got fired, but he took my friendly cues as, you know, me being flirty and touched me on several occasions. And, you know, another example, I had a realtor come in to check out my apartment for a tour. And we had spoken before, but he had emailed me a couple hours later and asked me to be his friend. Mind you, he was a 40-year-old married man and I had no interest in him. So my question to you, Dan, is should I be less friendly toward men in general to avoid these kinds of awkward conversations and being made uncomfortable? Should I be more closed off or should I just be my friendly self and call men out immediately?
I know this is a misuse of the term intersectional, but your friendly, open, engaging manner is intersecting with what I like to call dickful thinking on the guy's part. You're friendly and you're chit-chatty with these guys, with plumbers and coworkers and realtors, and you're attractive and you're young. And so this 40-something married realtor, his dick kicks in. The dickful thinking kicks in and overrides the frontal lobes. And it says, she must really be into you. She wouldn't be acting like this. She wouldn't be talking with you like this. She wouldn't be laughing at your jokes if she didn't want your dick. And that's unfortunate. And you shouldn't have to edit yourself or dial back your personality, but you might want to, because dickful thinking is a thing and you can be your friendly, bubbly self more safely with gay guys, with other women. Not that there aren't going to be some bi guys in the pile of guys you assume to be gay, or some women who might be bi or lesbian in the pile of women you assume might not be interested in you, who might engage in a little dickful or twatful thinking of their own. But straight guys, not all of them, hashtag not all straight men, but we hear constantly from straight guys who can't correctly interpret the behavior of the barista who seems so friendly, must want my dick. No, of course she doesn't want your dick. I mean, you hear all the time from straight guys who can't quite figure out why the barista is being so friendly to them. It's not that she wants to be tipped. It's not that she was hired and told that she had to be friendly and engaging with customers. It must be that she wants his dick. Now, of course, not all straight guys are prone to that fallacy. I'm sure you've had lots of interactions with straight guys over the course of your bubbly, engaging life who didn't immediately leap to, hey, she must want my dick. But you know that this is a risk, that there's a certain significant percentage of straight guys for whom the dickful thinking is going to kick in and they're going to misinterpret the signals that you are not sending them. You're not intentionally sending them flirtatious signals. You're just being friendly and they are rounding that up through the process of dickful thinking to flirtatious. So knowing what you know, if you want to avoid this, you're going to have to dial it back with the straight guys. You shouldn't have to, but you might want to, is what I'm saying. If you don't want to dial it back, and of course you don't have to dial it back, that means you're going to have to deflect the consequences of their problem, their shit, their dickful thinking. When they ask for your phone number, that's when you're going to have to shut it down. When they think, oh, she is basically making a pass at me so I can put my hand on her shoulder, around her waist, then you're going to have to shut them down. If that direct confrontational shutting them down shit is stressful and taxing, and you don't want to have to do that, your only other option in a world full of dickful thinking dudes is to dial it back, to be selective about the people that you are your most bubbly, engaging, chit-chatty self with. All right, before we get to your phoned-in comments, here are a few thoughts from the Twitters. Hey, at Fake Dan Savage, Laura Hurley tweets, heard a recent Savage Lovecast about a young woman needing to drive hours to access abortion services. Others in similar situations may try aidaccess.org, which is currently offering abortion medications online, including to those in the U.S. Other people have written to me about aidaccess.org. I'm familiar with it, familiar with the work they're doing, and we are reaching out to the folks at aidaccess.org to get them to come on a future Lovecast. Elon tweets, at Fake Dan Savage, did you see your SNL shout-out? Indeed, I did, and here is Kyle Mooney's impression of what I do here on this program.
Guys, if you're into the water sports, have some fun. Pee on each other.
Thank you for that, Kyle, and a big thank you to the SNL wig department that gave Kyle my black hair from 10 years ago and not my salt and pepper hair from right now. And J.M. Wilkins tweets, listening to the vile spewings of Fake Dan Savage at hashtag Savage Lovecast and loving it. Thank you, J.M. If you want me to see your tweets, be sure to hashtag them Savage Lovecast, and maybe I'll read them on a future show. All right, here are some of your phoned-in comments.
Hi, this is in response to the last episode about the nanny who's bathing the 7-year-old daughter and she started pleasuring herself with the finger brush. She's 7. Why do you have to be there when she bathes? You know, I'm a mom. I have 3 kids, and that age was old enough they could be bathing themselves. And instead of making a really awkward situation or upsetting the mother potentially, what I would do is tell the mom, she's old enough now. You think she can handle it by herself? You know, set like 15 minutes, tell her to get in, wash her hair, wash her body. And in 15 minutes, if she's not out, knock on the door. But I would pose it as, you know, I just think she's getting older now. And I think maybe she should be bathing herself at this point. What do you think? And maybe the mom will get it without you having to say it.
Hi, this is a response to the nanny in the last episode with a question regarding bath time. Dan, you were right. And I will also say, just as a professional nanny to any other nannies out there, always tell the parents, especially if there is something around child sexuality, regardless of what it is, regardless of how awkward the conversation is going to be, get out ahead of it. And talk to the parents. You do not want to be in that conversation later of, oh, my child mentioned something funny the other day. Do you know anything about this? If there is something that squicks you out, if there is something involving child sexuality, if there is something that else that possibly might raise a red flag, always, always, nannies out there, tell the parents right away. They need to know that. They need to be able to protect their child, and that's part of your job. You are protecting your child, and you are helping the parents protect their child. Always tell the parents if there's something going on.
Hi, Dan. This is a voicemail in regard to episode 628 about the nanny calling regarding the child who was pleasuring herself in the bathtub. I think your answer was totally spot on. As a pediatrician, my red flags immediately went up when I heard what that nanny was saying about this child, particularly the sounds that this little girl is making. As unfortunately, we see a lot of sexual abuse and trauma in kiddos in the emergency room and in the primary care office. And I think that although obviously it's great to be in a sex positive culture, sex positivity with a 7-year-old doesn't extend to encouraging her to make, I guess I would say, like sexually suggestive noises like that of her own accord. So I would definitely speak with that girl's mom.
And we're going to leave it there. 206-302-2064 is the number here at the Savage Lovecast. If you'd like to record a question or a comment for a future show, give us a buzz. 206-302-2064. The 14th annual Hump Film Festival continues this weekend in Portland and Seattle and San Francisco. Go to humpfilmfest.com for tickets. Follow me on Twitter at Fake Dan Savage. The Savage Lovecast is produced every week by Nancy Hartunian and me and the tech-savvy at-risk youth and Nancy. We'll all be back at you next week. Another installment of the Savage Lovecast. Thank you for downloading.